You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is Rascals. I'm Matt from Tennessee.
I'm James from London.
And I'm Rascal Lou from Nebraska. Matt from Tennessee.
Lou from Nebraska.
What's this I hear that you're refusing to come on for a fistful of datas and the quality of life?
Well, you know, they're just they're classics in their own right. I don't want to, you know, take away from whatever wonderful reviews you guys are going to give them.
Big ratings.
So I think, though, Matt, you can say with certainty that you would not be in future appearing for a recording of either those two episodes.
No, of course not. No,
From today, you're absolutely correct. You will not be in the next two recordings from the future today.
From the future today.
From the future today. The past today, on the other hand, you may or may not be in those recordings.
I cannot speak to events of which I have or have not yet or will yet participate in.
Okay. Okay. So, you know, of course, I'm sorry, guys. We are having to do this again. I don't know why. All I got was, you know, it's strange is the recording pretty much starts with me breathing and then leaving the room and going upstairs. So it's like it waited till we were done to start recording, and then it started recording, and I've got about 9 hours of air.
And even for us, that doesn't quite hit the quality control. Right?
No, I don't get that at all. I don't get it at all. I don't know what happened.
But, so we should point out that we have already recorded this episode before.
Yeah. Yeah.
A long time ago.
Twice. All written out.
No. Third time's charm.
And the thing is that we do have we do have a backlog. We have a backlog of episodes that are waiting to be released. Yeah. But
I think they're waiting on this one.
Yes. But whilst waiting for this backlog to be filled, we're starting to lose things that were in the backlog. And we're having to replug the backlog. Yeah. So apologies everyone. I have no idea what I gave this episode when we first spoke about it, because
I do.
I know you do. You have the official record. I put together, whenever I do a review or whenever I kind of get ready for a review, I set out some notes, and it's usually in, you know, one note. And as we're chatting, I usually I delete the notes. So as I've made a point, things get deleted. And then at the end of the review, there's a blank page. Hmm. So I have a blank page in front of me. So good luck, guys.
You should have watched it again.
I did.
Oh, good. Yeah, blank page. So what?
Well, I watched it on the tube. I watched it on the London Underground. So it was hard to make notes.
The London Underground.
Well, I have the advantage of I'm too lazy to throw stuff away, and I just happen to have the notes still right here on the table in front of me.
Whereas I do it all on computer, and I've got notes from years ago.
Well, we're going to try to keep this spontaneous and fresh like it was the first time, because apparently none of us remember it anyway.
That's absolutely correct.
Oh, I do. No, I don't. The spark is going to be gone. It won't be as flashy as it was, because we had some massively philosophical debates on this episode. I'm hoping we can recreate them.
Just a quick question. This one's the one with the whales, right?
Yes.
Yes.
The whales go back in time, or the whales get younger or something.
So Matt, I don't know if you know this particular anecdote, but
okay,
I've tried to say it enough, and it's a bit of an in-joke, and perhaps you've even forgotten, Lou, because of it's not funny and it's not interesting, really. But, you know, my wife, we've been together for, what's it, now 20, come up to 21 years.
Wow.
She doesn't watch Star Trek, never watched Star Trek. I might have got an episode here and there, and she's managed to watch a couple of films. She's of the opinion that the new films are good and the old films are bad. But I did try to get her to sit down and watch The Wrath of Khan, to which her reply was, "No, I think we've seen that. That's the one with the whales, right?" I just can't understand how you can even take the title Wrath of Khan and think whales.
Whales.
Whales. That's a bit of an in-joke.
That's grounds for divorce.
Khan was that black tube thing, right? That was...
I think so.
So with the volleyball sticking out of it, that was Khan.
Whenever she asks me whether we want to do this or whether we want to do that, it's always, "Oh, yeah, that's the one with the whales, right? You know, we're going to a concert next week. The one, you know, the guys with the whales."
Yes, it's the whales. Oh, that's funny. Yeah, that's grounds for a divorce, and you should get full custody of your kids to keep them from being poisoned.
What?
No, from keep them from being poisoned. You don't want her raising your kids if she doesn't know Star Trek.
Did you know how painful it would be in order to raise my kids?
You're not the one. I'm not the one that said, "Hey, why don't we try for another?"
Look, I think that when there's one kid involved, there's a bit of, you know, obviously, you know, people are going to have very strong arguments as who's raising who, and that might stay until you have like two or three. But when you get the fight, it's like, blimey, no, you keep them.
Wait a minute. You're missing the point, James. You had five, right? You're supposed to raise two, and they're supposed to raise the rest.
That is true. That and the internet hopefully will provide a good foundation for these children.
Oh, it will. Good or bad, it will.
Well, see, that's why you have that meant you just... You divide them in half. You know, one person takes two, the other one takes two, and then the third one or the fifth one just kind of gets, you know, split between. Yeah.
Well, the fifth is she's now pretty much grown up. She's fine.
And she's what, one?
What? 15.
Oh, the first one. I thought you said the fifth one.
Yeah, the fifth, as in the remainder of taking the children and dividing by two.
Yeah. After you've picked your two favorite and your wife picks her two favorite.
That poor one gets left out. Oh, well. Okay. Yeah. Your parents are now the dogs. Okay. Or cats or whales. Okay.
Hey, speaking of kids.
Wow.
Lou, if you could edit that into a good segue, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, I could try. Okay, anyway, well then, hey, you know, what's the synopsis for tonight? I keep forgetting. The whale.
Oh, it's the one with the whales.
Yes. The one with the whales.
All right, the synopsis for tonight's show is Captain Picard, Ensign Roe, Guinan, and Keiko O'Brien are regressed physiologically to age 12 by a transporter accident. But retain their adult memories, resulting in different reactions from each. When rogue Ferengi hijacked the Enterprise, the young crew members, along with the heroic Alexander Rozhenko, lead the revolt. This is the seventh episode of Season 6 of Star Trek The Next Generation. It was originally released on November 2nd, 1992, written by Ward and Diana Botsford and Michael Piller, with teleplay by Allison Hawk. Directed by a fresh newcomer, Adam Nimoy.
Huh.
Guest stars. it's almost like I've seen that name somewhere before, but I can't quite place it.
Fascinating.
Guest stars this week include Cole Meany as Miles O'Brien, Rosalind Chow as Keiko O'Brien, with Caroline Junko King playing the younger Keiko O'Brien, Michelle Forbes as Ro Laren, with Megan Parlin as young Roll Laren, David Triskin Birkin as young Picard, Mike Gomez as Laren, Tracy Walter as Barrick, Michael Schneider as Morta, Brian Bonsall as Alexander Rozhenko, and special guest stars Whoopi Goldberg as Guinan and Isis Jones as the younger Guinan, and also Majel Barrett Roddenberry as the voice of the computer. So, Lou, what did you think of this one today?
Gee, I hadn't really thought about this episode.
Let me just dust down some notes.
Well, it's pretty good. I like the fact that there are whales in it.
George and Gracie as whales 1 and 2. I forgot that. Yes.
Whales 1 and 2. Yeah, which one was 1 and which one was 2? I don't know, but there be no whales in here. I already know how you guys felt about it, but I thought I'd be in the minority by thinking I like the episode. It's fun and lighthearted. Assuming you don't consider, you don't count the Ferengi threatening to kill children, it's a pretty good episode. There are some downfalls to the story. I kind of wish the youngsters could have went up against someone other than the Ferengi, who never should have been able to take over the Enterprise like they did. But, hey, we've become accustomed to Worf sucking at his job. And, of course, there's the creepy part, the creepy candy coating part. But we'll get to that.
I don't know what you've got against jumping on the bed. Jeez.
Yeah, I know. It's creepy. It's creepy. But here's one thing you got to remember for all time. He's my number one dad.
You're still talking about Worf, right?
Yes, he's my number one dad. I'd like to know where Worf was when the Ferengi took over. I guess he was just kind of like, I don't know, thinking about whales. So what about you, Matt? What are your thoughts?
I love this episode. This is one that I go back to all the time. I don't know why either. That's something about it. It's just a fun episode, I think.
Yeah.
It like you said, it's obviously got its problems, but for what it is, I actually enjoy it, and then we'll get into the reasons why here in a little bit.
We might.
Okay. As I recall the conversations we've had prior, I think that this one will be fruitful.
Yes, fruitful. And anyway, James?
Hey.
Hi.
So I don't remember. I honestly don't remember, and I fear contradicting myself. So, Lou, just between you and I, what did I give this last time? I honestly do not remember, and as is very much the case when I kind of review these things, and I think I can, I think I'm a very volatile character. I can give episodes high, and I can give episodes low, and I don't know.
Well, there's no record of your last review, so you can just make it whatever you want it to be this time.
Yeah, I don't remember.
So here's the thing. This episode is great in that it does give Odo the comeback when Worf comes along and says, "Odo, hey, what's up with security here?" And he goes, "But didn't you lose the ship to a bunch of Ferengi once?" And he's like, "Owned! Oh, get back out there and don't let the door hit you on the way out, Worf." Uh-huh. So if for nothing else, that's there. I do remember having big problems with the fact that why does the hat shrink? Why would the hat shrink? It makes no sense for the hat to shrink.
Well, the clothes shrunk.
I mean, I know it looked ridiculous.
Well, sort of.
What do you mean?
Well, the clothes sort of shrunk. They didn't all shrink, but they did some.
No, that's true. I mentioned before that the comm badges don't shrink. But some of the clothes do, and some of the hair grows. I mean, what's going on here? It makes very little sense.
You're right. Clearly, if the transporter could create hair, it could create hair. So maybe Picard actually has a program in there that it will not put hair on my head.
But I suppose if you do think about it, right, if you wanted to alleviate some of my quote-unquote scientific issues of this episode, which aren't really scientific, right? They're nitpicks as to why would it happen like this? Because it's just not very well... I'm not going to say it's not well thought through. I'm going to say that it doesn't matter. And anyone that is such a, you know, such in a pedantic space to start moaning about why does the hair not grow or why doesn't Picard come back with a beard if you are adding hair during the transportation, it's kind of not the whole point of the story, right? Uh-huh. You know, the lack of hair doesn't make this thing collapse. So,
yeah, I suppose that doesn't matter.
Yeah. So let's see where we go on this. I don't know where I'm going to land.
Okay. All right. Well, here's a captain's log. And I wrote this a month and a half ago.
That death traps these things.
It should still be the same.
Absolutely. Keiko Guinan and Ensign Ro are returning to the Enterprise on a death trap, like you say, the shuttle or a...
The USS Death Trap.
Death Trap. after a fascinating visit to the planet Malona. Anyway, you don't need any information about it. It's not that important. Now, you guys didn't realize this the last time I brought this up, too. But Keiko was holding plants in a Starfleet Material Supply Command 06 Model 0520. And this particular model...
Well, obviously.
It is unfortunate that the last recording was lost, so we could bring this up now.
Sure. This particular model is well known for having preloaded dirt and grass, and also could be used as dish for food that needs growth as well. But the previous model, I think it was the 0517C.
At least that's how the legend goes.
Yes, they were known for growing plants too quickly, which initiates investigations as to where missing time is. It was really no good. So they skipped 1819 and went straight to the model 0520 that she's holding. Now,
I think
enough,
we saw 19s in True Q, didn't we?
Oh, I thought we weren't supposed to speak of that no more.
No, well, I mean, they were susceptible to the temporal, because she sped them up too fast.
Yeah, well, you
so that's why yes. The 19s were no good.
Yes, exactly. We can't discuss that model. Starfleet will come after us. So
no, that's right. Strike drops from the record.
Yeah. So actually, I'm gonna restart this episode because I want to see something. I don't remember if the plants actually devolved. I don't know if that's a good word for it. Or what happened. Because, like we discussed, the uniforms all got smaller. No, the plant holder, the little... Picard's little... I don't know if that's his suitcase or something. The little round tubular thing. Yes, that got... that's the same size. But you're right, Rose's sleeves go down to her knees now, so.
Yeah, I don't understand why, it seems like it should have been just a simple thing, just put the kids in the regular uniforms.
Yes.
I don't know why that would have been such a difficult thing to do to get this effect.
Yeah, oh what. Okay, so anyway. So the Enterprise calls the shuttle because they're taking too long and we need to get going because we have an emergency on LIGO 7. The shuttle's almost to the ship when they get caught in some kind of energy field, and yeah, in typical fashion, we need to have an emergency beam out. And that beam out causes some interesting things to happen.
Okay, quick point here. So... Yeah. Okay, so they've used a shuttle to go somewhere far away. Shuttles, we've discussed many times, shuttle doesn't have warp, so it's sitting there going forever, and there's no reason to use a shuttle. Then the shuttle gets into trouble just let it enter in transporter beam range. What? That this is convenient. And then the other thing I saw about the shuttle this time that I didn't think I raised last time is that these shuttles are the least convenient thing to use in terms
of...
If you see, you have two chairs at the front and you've got two backless benches, and it is literally like, you know, it's like getting on a transatlantic airplane and you basically just sit on the bench at the back. It just seems crazy. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, you know, they needed new chairs because normally they don't have four people. But still, it's it looks really ropey. And again, no toilet at the back, nowhere to go to sleep.
Yeah, yeah, it seems like they could have at least brought a couch in for them or something, you know.
Well, it looks like behind Guinan is a bench. I guess they could, you know, alternate. I'll sleep down the full time. Anyway, so, okay, so everything seems normal, but, you know, we have a serious problem and we have to beam out. It's, it doesn't matter. But, okay, so... Of course, now, what beams to the ship? We have four children, and it was kind of funny when you hear Picard's voice come out, you know, thank you, Mr. O'Brien. You know, it basically sounds like his balls hiked themselves way back up like they were 40 years ago.
That's what happens when you transport them, right? Yeah. They don't just de-age them, but they just pop them upwards.
Yep. I wonder how long it took for the computer to get that done.
Well, you know, they were in the sitting position in the shuttle and then standing on the pads. You know, the transport had to make some assumptions about body position.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it doesn't always get it exactly right, I guess.
That doesn't matter. Well, exactly. So they're sitting down when they're beaming, they stand up. I mean, we've seen people that were on the holodeck sitting up, and then all of a sudden they forgot to stand up, and boom, they hit the floor. So I would think that would happen with the transporter, but apparently it corrects you. Which is good. You don't want people falling on the transporter all the time. Oh, damn it, I forgot to correct the legs. Sorry, guys. My bad. That would be a Orville thing, wouldn't it?
I would just once love to see an away team beam down, but O'Brien puts him like a foot above the ground.
Yeah, right. Okay, hey, I need a tangent. Yeah, I need... yeah, damn it. Damn it, Mr. O'Brien. That's why you're still here instead of somewhere important. Anyway, I need a tangent real quick.
Already?
Absolutely. Okay.
No, we can't do that on this show. Come on.
We didn't have this tangent because it didn't happen back then. But are we all caught up with the Orville?
I think
somebody say yes.
No. Well, I mean, I haven't seen any episodes of the Orville at all. So you're probably clear to go with whatever you like. When we chatted last... which is in the future for people listening. Spooky. Whilst the wife was away, which is probably also in the future for people listening as well.
Yeah, she's leaving you again.
Did you get caught up on Discovery?
I did. I did a full bender on Discovery.
Nice.
I only have the last two parts to watch. So I did like 13 episodes back to back.
Good.
Okay. But anyway, Orville.
Orville, did you see the last one, Matt?
I have not seen the last one yet. I'll watch that one tomorrow, but I've seen everything up till that.
All right, guess what, guys? We don't get to talk about it today.
Oh, man.
No. It's a season finale, and it's a cliffhanger from the of the greatest what the hell is going to happen now. And I'm not messing you up with that one. So
do they do a guy like Mr. Worf Fire kind of cliffhanger?
Worf Fire?
Mr. Worf.
Oh, no. Fire. No, it doesn't do the Worf Fire or anything like that. It basically null and voids the entire series and everything for the last 7 years. And that's all I'm going to say.
Yes.
Null and void. If what we believe happened really happened, everything is null and void. But I'm sure Seth isn't done yet. He likes to play with people, and that's what he's done.
Well, last I heard, Orville has still not gotten the official renewal yet. Unless you've heard something I haven't.
Well, if they haven't gotten the official renewal, this is the way to go out, then. It's the way to go out.
Okay.
But yeah, no, watch it, and next time you're on, which is never.
In the past, probably from now.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Yeah, from the past, from now. I think we talked about on the Discovery doc. What did you think of the Talosians that you finally got to see?
Oh, I thought they were great. I didn't have any problem with them at all.
You thought I was kidding when I said they had big noses.
I wasn't particularly put off by the big nose. I thought it was a fine representation. I got spooked out by what's the lady called? She was
Vina.
Yeah. She used to be, what's it? She used to be in a soap in England, or it is an Australian soap that was popular in England. So I kind of knew of her. Thought, hang on, I can't quite place that woman.
Melissa George, I think, was her name.
That's right. So I haven't finished season two. I think that some of my favorite things in season two, actually, frankly, I think the best season two episode was the second one. It would have been the second or the third, but it was the one with the planet of humans that they went to that had been saved from Earth. I thought that was like a really interesting kind of setup of the story. When it became throughout the season, I think it got to be relatively, clean in terms of, once they kind of laid their cards on the table as to what was going on, it was a little bit, I don't know, I think it descended slightly into action filmy territory. Like you're just watching it for the action. Now, maybe in the last two hours, there's a big change, a big kind of like movement in the plot, but I kind of felt that for the last 5-6 episodes at least, it's been relatively kind of straightforward from here. And one problem that I had with season one of Discovery, and I think if it was in a review that we did, Lou, I did mention that there's a bit when someone actually mentions, if we don't succeed, we're gonna, all life in all universes is going to be lost.
Yeah.
And in a way you think, well, how are you going to top that? And they've kind of done a very similar thing in season two, which is that if we don't win, all sentient life in the universe will be lost for all time. Well, okay, great. It's very hard to have that kind of threat and juxtaposition it with something like The Measure of a Man or other stories that I think sci-fi gives a very good window to deal with issues. And that's something that I don't think they've managed to hit their stride on yet. I think that even when you had the Dominion Wars in DS9, and I would even say, I know the Zindi arc was slightly different, but certainly the fourth season on Enterprise, I think they hit the big concept, personal story, better than they have been doing in Discovery. And I just think they have to crank down the threat to civilization slightly. But anyway,
no, I absolutely agree with you. I'd say that's a good description of it.
Okay. All
but right. But I will say that the last episode
is good.
It is good. But the last one is going to be a lot of action, the sci-fi special effects stuff that you were just talking about.
Unreal. I mean, it was absolutely, you could not make out who was on whose side or what was doing what. It was just clustered all over the screen. But anyway.
I have a problem with Section 31, though, coming up. I don't think Section 31 needs to be used. And the reason being is that, and this is slightly true with a lot of things that are only hinted at. In particular, Section 31, right, is a mysterious unit that you don't get a lot of information on. So the ambiguity can be a very kind of constructive for the ideas and the interpretation you have around stories. As soon as Section 31 gets kind of thrown out into the light, which I would even argue that Enterprise shouldn't have touched Section 31. I don't think that the reboot movie should have touched Section 31. And everything I've seen so far of Discovery, when we're now talking about, hey, they've got fleets, I see no reason for that to be there. If Section 31 has fleets, then the Romulans, the Klingons, they know about Section 31.
And well, I'm not giving anything away by telling you this, but okay. I think the way they leave it at the end, it gives the plausible idea that it's that this organization could very easily go back into the shadows.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, just watch it to the end, and you know, I think that's a plausible way to think that it ends up happening. And whether it stays that way in season 3, I don't know, but.
I do love Watson. I do love the tradition that has been followed in Discovery, which is the, you know, the corrupt admiral that's still doing it, or at least the bad admiral. And you know, I know a whole load of them got murdered or replaced or whatever, but that's always that's always good, at least.
Okay.
Huh?
Anyway,
so. So I think we're about to the end of the teaser, right?
Yeah. I think so. I mean, I think so, yeah. Picard has hair. I mean, enough said. So
now, this is where I think they really should have gone for broke in the episode. They should have, in the opening credits, they should have had David Tristan Birkin do the opening monologue. He should have had him doing the space, the final frontier. Mm-hmm. Had his name as starring as Captain Picard, and then mm-hmm. later on had Patrick Stewart as a guest star in the episode. I think they really should have gone for broke with it.
Hmm.
And I think it was a missed opportunity.
Well, do you want to re-record that guest star stuff again? I think that'd be funny, actually.
No, I could just hear the young Picard saying the monologue in the beginning of the episode. And
space, the final frontier.
Could you imagine how freaked out the audience would be by that?
Definitely. The ends of the Voyagers. Anyway. Yeah. Okay, so they've somehow reverted to children, but it's okay because he's still the captain. I mean, obviously everything's going to be fine, but no. Okay, let's talk about how the crew addressed the children. Even Riker has a hard time taking them serious. Okay, does it make sense that they would... Okay, let's say all these people are freaked out that Picard is now 12 years old. What about Data? I mean, the fact that everything they say to him, they stop and have to go, sir? Seriously? Is the people in the Federation that unprofessional?
Data should have been at least one to pick it up, and you know, once it became clear that, you know, this was Picard and he still has his faculties about him and can still give orders, yeah, at least Data should have been on board with it and said, okay, cool.
He never should have been off board. I mean, he knows this is Picard, he knows it's his commanding officer, he needs to respect him, but I don't know what the order was, but he's sir. No, I don't see Data doing that at all.
But yeah, it seems like when Picard said he was going to the bridge, somebody should have called up to the bridge and say, hey, he's going to be coming up. He's a kid. Just go with it.
Mm-hmm.
But even, no, everybody is surprised. Worf.
Worf is getting heartburn over it, you know? Imagine him. This big warrior now has to take orders from the 12-year-old. Today would be a good day to die instead of living with him.
Oh, I wish Worf had been on that shuttle.
I'm surprised that the word globfly didn't come up again. Globfly.
I would have loved to have seen a young Worf interacting with Alexander.
Yeah, right.
Hey, Alexander, could you get a message to the captain?
Anyway. James?
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm still here.
Okay. So I'll make sure you got something to say.
No, not really. No, I mean, I think that the conceit of this episode, right, is... I think it's actually relatively interesting that you could ask the questions, and you kind of, you know, the first half of the episode talks about that, you know, what do people do if they were to have been reverted to childhood, and now what? and it is kind of like a sci-fi idea. I do think that they do overplay their cards in terms of whoa, look at this person. This person's, you know, got a captain uniform on. He's clearly Captain Picard, because I assume that at least in universe you would assume this guy has, you know, family resemblance, etc. And for people like Data to be, you know, having to catch themselves being, you know, not following orders, or at least not being respectful and addressing the captain appropriately, is it's a bit of a stretch. But of course, that might play in this for a bit of a like fish out of water kind of a setup at this stage in the episode, at least.
Right. Well, actually, I take it back. There was one person who just snapped the. She didn't have. It was a cute little ensign who was flying the ship. She absolutely had no problem at all. Yes, sir. Aye, sir. And just carried out his orders.
That's because they don't pay for those people to say anything.
Well, that's true. That could be.
If you needed a different reaction, you had to pay. You had to pay more.
Right, right. Although she kind of had a look of, yeah, looked me up in about 8 years or so, sir.
Don't be rude.
Anyway, no, she did.
Let's watch it. Does he have his artificial heart still? By the way, when they revert. Do they revert him with the artificial heart? And if he still does have the artificial heart, what size is it?
It's the same size. It's now just hurting his chest because it's pushing things out of the way.
It's not two sizes too small, at least according to that little measuring device that the Grinch had.
Yeah. You know, it's a good question, because obviously he has his artificial heart. The Enterprise computer never knew of his real one. Every time he's ever beamed, the information it has is the artificial. So why wouldn't it just do that?
Now, I do have to say that, you know,
but,
despite...
Go ahead.
Despite this nitpicking, I obviously don't want a hyper-realistic episode where they beam them aboard, they realize that either you can't revert and they will die on the pad, or you can revert... But Picard still dies on the pad because his heart no longer fits.
cardiac yeah. arrest.
Yeah, that would have been good, actually. Yeah, that would have been interesting. It would have made it a lot better. But here's the thing. I just said that the computer didn't know of a regular heart. It just knew of the artificial. The computer also doesn't know about the hair on his head either. So it couldn't have created that from memory.
It's certainly not memory, right?
It's on genetics, I think it was.
It had to be, how he reverted like this.
Yeah, but the thing about genetics is that the genetics isn't going to include a hairstyle, whichever way you cut it. So,
yeah, right.
You know, even if you assume that there's some type of, you know, they can reverting means that there would have been growth, but there wouldn't have been a hairstyling being done at the same, at the same time.
Yeah.
So yeah, they should have come out of the transporter with like this long, straggly hair, huge long fingernails, because they'd never been clipped.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. Okay. Okay, so anyway, let's see. Are you here to relieve me of duty? Do you think she would have if had he not refused to just step down? Because she said, I don't want to have to do that.
Yeah, either you do it voluntarily or we do this non-voluntarily. That's pretty much what that came down to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was gonna happen either way.
So anyway, I did not get the correlation of the kid playing the young Picard and as a kid who also played Robert's son. What is it, Rene?
Yeah, Rene. Of course, that was. What, 2 years ago? He's grown up a little bit more since then.
Yeah, maybe a little. Yeah, he has. Okay. So, let's see.
Well, I mean, you mentioned that, and I just want to say, I think that the kids who got to play these actors, I think they all nailed it.
Oh, yeah.
I buy each one of them as being the younger version of the other characters. Absolutely.
Yeah. But especially Ro. Yeah. What makes you think this is some kind of second childhood? Well, you could look at it that way, or you do have the chance of having a second childhood. But anyway, let's talk about Crusher. Are you here to relieve me of duty? Could she? I mean, under what rule could she possibly relieve him? Because he is technically fit for duty. He's there. His brain is there. His knowledge and skills are intact. The only thing I could see is, you know, when a Romulan comes along. On screen. Hello, I'm Captain Jean-Luc Picard.
Who the hell are you?
Well, to be fair, I mean, there's supposed to be a, you know, this is the Federation of the future. They deal with all sorts of species from everywhere. I'm sure that there is a species or two out there that presents as being a lot younger than they actually are. So it wouldn't be outside the realm of possibility that you would have a young-looking command officer who's not actually young.
Yeah.
You know, of different species or not. So I...
Okay.
I don't know if I buy that. But I think the doctor might... You know, this was a trauma that these four have experienced, the results of which they still haven't completely identified with. I mean, there could be memory issues that will present themselves later. They just don't know. And so I think the stepping down from command, at least temporarily, is a preventative measure in case something does present itself that they're not aware of yet.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with that. I think the idea that, you know, we don't know what it is, and they don't know how to solve it, and they actually also don't know whether it's going to get worse, or you know, the problem here could be that just they become children, or the problem could be that they become children and in 12 weeks' time they explode. So I would actually kind of suggest they look into this and to make sure that you know, look, if someone was in charge and they had a medical condition that wasn't understood, they would be taken off duty just for precaution. And you should never put yourself in a position, right, from an in-canon perspective where you rely so much on one character that you're expecting them to turn up to work even in the event that they've been turned into a 12-year-old child. I mean, that there's a little bit of key man risk you're running there if that's the best solution given the evidence.
Ensign Rowe, I realize that this has been a traumatic incident for you, but you got your shift in half an hour.
Yeah.
You better be to work on time.
She's like 6 months out of the academy or something. And she's like, no, we have no one else that can do this job at all other than you, but I can't reach the console. Get a cushion.
Get a cushion. Okay. Yeah, step stool. Get in the chair. Okay. All right. So, he relieves himself of duty and he goes to play with something, blocks or some, or maybe dominoes. But meanwhile, back in the O'Brien quarters, this is where it just gets weird.
It doesn't get weird.
Okay, yeah, it doesn't get weird. No, of course not.
You have problems with this.
Yes, I do. This is my only problem with this.
It's a typical Thursday night in the O'Brien house.
Yes, she's making tea or coffee or something. She's watering her plants and asks, would you like some coffee? Of course I would. Thank you. And he tells her, oh, be careful, it's hot. Oh, my goodness. Excuse me, I'm aware, but okay, so they don't even take a drink. They just kind of put their coffee down, and then she crawls onto his arm. And, of course, that poor man, we always mistreat O'Brien, don't we?
Neither one of them handle this very well.
Well, how is he going to handle it? He gets all creeped up. I mean, he's creeped out, and he gets up to a stern lecture that Miles Edward O'Brien. Oh, you know he's in trouble now. I am still your wife, but she does ask the million-pound question: is our marriage over? I don't know. Is it?
Well, it's only been a day.
Mm-hmm. Which means she really shouldn't be crawling on his arm just yet.
Right, yeah.
Anyway, having a cuddle or just having contact to reassure someone is different. I mean, Lou, you're coming from the idea that, you know, when this couple have to get down and dirty, how is that going to work? And I kind of, you know, obviously they're still newlyweds, but I would imagine they can wait an afternoon or so before having to answer that question as to how it's going to go down.
Well, I mean, like, Miles needs to understand that she still has all of her memories. As far as she's concerned, she is still 35 or however old she actually is. I don't know. Mm. You know, so, you know, but telling her, you know, saying be careful, it's hot, that's a stupid thing for him to do. You know,
it's a reactive. It's natural. When you see a kid carrying a hot item, you, oh, careful, careful, it's hot. But it's normal. I mean, she's a kid.
You know, but at the same time, I recognize that she needs to realize that she's presenting as 12 years old and that it would seem awkward to him, you know, to be cuddled up next to him like that, you know. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, she's been through a trauma and wanting a hug from the person she knows to be her husband does not seem unreasonable.
Would it have made any difference? I don't know if I asked this question. Would it have made any difference if they used small adults playing children?
I think.
Adults, you mean an actual midget?
Yes, yes, playing children. I mean,
somebody who is 18 who's portraying a 12-year-old.
Yes, an actual adult. I wouldn't be so creeped out for that. But the fact that they actually have children playing adults who became children, it's just creepy for me.
So Duke, I think it's better to phrase it as a young-looking adult rather than like a 4 foot or a 3 foot 6 small person.
I mean, you know, when are they ever going to have Kira Yoshi if she doesn't actually come back to her adult self?
Well, the passage with time will get you to your adult self, right? One way or the other.
Yes, but what's that going to be like for the next 8 years? Separate bedrooms? Well, is she going to now bunk up with Molly?
Well, you know, it's important to remember, Keiko is still 35. I'm just going to say that because I think that, you know, that's probably how old she was. She's still 35. Even if she looks 12, she is 35. She is an adult.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's not reasonable to expect her to bunk up with Molly now. You know, she is still who she is.
Yeah. She only looks about, what, 8 years older than Molly? 9 years older than Molly?
Right.
I mean, Molly's the one that hits it, nails it on the head. Not you. I want mommy. I mean, obviously... She's just the only one to say it because she doesn't have a filter on her thoughts yet. But what if, I mean, it's still a question of what if they never get older? What if they stay like this forever? Marriage over?
They never age? Even 30, 40 years down the road, she still looks 12?
Yes. In fact, they're going to live forever because their body never entropies. Is that the word I'm looking for? Decay, entropy. Anyway, I mean, as you get older, your cells decay. They never do because they're stuck like this forever. Does that mean she not only never, their marriage is over, and that she never gets married again because she just happens to look this young?
Well, I mean, you're kind of throwing a lot of things in here, right, already, mm-hmm. because the idea of having, you know, can you have a relationship with someone that's so different to you that fundamentally, there's not a connection there. So it's like, can Data settle down and marry if he's going to outlive every spouse he's ever going to have by thousands and thousands of years? Mm-hmm. And you know, you've had sci-fi stories that kind of, you know, go through that story. I would imagine that if you are seeking a partner through life, you probably need someone to experience the things that you're going through and to be there to experience the things that they're going through. And if you're going to tell me that someone's going to be static and frozen in time, then that's probably not a good person to share life with.
So I'm sorry, which are you saying that's, which is not a good person to share life with?
Someone that's ageless, someone that won't age, someone that won't, you know, won't experience and have the perspective of, you know, being with you. Well, I would imagine.
I would think that for O'Brien, if she'd be stuck in anything, if she was stuck as a hot 19-year-old, yeah, he could probably live with that for the rest of his life. 12-year-old? No.
I'm gonna claim no on that one.
Oh, I'm gonna claim yes on that one.
Look, the philosophical point doesn't change. If you say that you have to be able to experience life together as a couple, it doesn't change when you say, well, actually, unless you can keep your hot 19-year-old body, then let's do it.
Right. Well, I mean, you got to figure he'll be able to handle that a lot better than this is my wife, you know, or who maybe is my daughter now. I don't know, but I couldn't do it. You couldn't do it. I could not do it. If she was like that forever, or let's say, you know, in the future, Roe and Riker.
Quick question, Lou, and I don't know if I asked you this last time, but what about Kes? Is Kes okay? She's got like a mature body, but she's only like three.
At the beginning of the show, she's one.
One. Yes, one.
But Lou's kind of, she'll give her a year to mature. That's fine.
You know, that even raises another question. How the hell did she come out of her mother? I mean,
painfully?
Well,
They show her birth in one episode.
So she's born as a baby. Within a month, she's already 10?
Yep.
I mean, it's really, that'd be really weird in itself, but you're right. It doesn't feel the same because she does obviously look like a woman. This little girl does not look like a woman. And if she never looks like a woman, that would just be creepy until the end of time. I couldn't do it.
There's so much wrong with your camper, right? Because aren't the camper the guys that have, they can only have one child?
Yes.
Which, if you just think about it, it doesn't take a long time. There are 8 Ocampa. 4 of the women have children. You then got 4 Ocampa. Next generation, those have children. Now you have 2, and then you have 1. Then you're gone. So there's a name for this, which is exponential decay. And no population wants to be suffering from exponential decay.
Well,
it's not a good future.
If you start with infinite population,
you're okay.
You're okay.
Okay.
But
so the question is, I just said that I could not handle the situation where my wife is regressed to 12 years old and may never change or never grow again.
Well, would it be possible that after a certain amount of time it would become just a new normal? I mean, it seems skeevy to you right now, but is it possible that given enough time you'd be able to make peace with it and it would just be a, this is just the way things are now?
Mm-mm. No, it's the appearance is worse because maybe it's because I know the actors playing these parts are actual children. Again, I went back to if they were young, if they were adults, small adults, midgets, if you want to call them. I think that's a bad term. But if they were small adults,
just say young looking adults,
young looking adults that I knew that were they were adults. I could then see. I could see O'Brien being okay, sort of, with the fact that she looks like 12, but we, the viewer, know she's not. But we, the viewer, know she is, and therefore, I wouldn't touch that one with the 10-foot pole.
Well, like you guys? Well, like I said, we, the viewer, know the actress playing her is 12.
Yeah.
But the character herself is still in her 30s.
Yeah. Right. The characters in the 30s, yes.
Just at the current time doesn't appear the way we would expect a 30-year-old to look.
Okay. So what would you think if Miles became more turned on over this situation? Yeah, there's a little creeper moment. That's what I'm saying. You can't Miles couldn't possibly returned any affection to this girl because it would make no sense.
Well, that's what I mean.
You can have non-sexual affection.
In a marriage, yes, I suppose that's possible. But when, you know, Thursday night comes, and Thursday night's always fun night.
Is it?
It could be. It could be for the O'Briens. You know, Molly goes to the Petersons' quarters, and they have Thursday night with a little wine, a little romance, a little dancing, and then Miles, you know, spending 10 minutes pleasing Keiko, and then says, "Oh, you were great." And she says, "Thanks." Can he do that this coming Thursday? Should he do that this coming Thursday?
I don't know about this coming Thursday, but I mean,
give it a month. Yeah,
so she'll be 12 years old in 4 months instead of 38.
It's not about the age. It's about the idea that you don't have to. Upon your wife being turned into a prepubescent girl, you shouldn't necessarily, as a look, you shouldn't be jumping in.
There you go. So if he's now not allowed, or he's forbidden from the Keiko fruit because it just reverted itself.
Well, like I said, it's a new normal they would have to adjust to. It's not something that comes naturally now because of, you know, the normal perception of it. But like I said, given enough time with the realization that she is still an adult woman.
Yes.
You know, given enough time, I think that they could adjust to this new normal.
Okay, let's say they do, and this is really going to be a disgusting question, but it's still one that I can't help but wonder. Let's say they do adjust to this new normal, and she's just going to look like this. Or maybe she does get older. Does he wait 8 years, or in a month from now, as this new normal is taking effect, would he even fit? I mean, could they even do anything? I don't think they could.
One question. Why are you saying wait 8 years? What are you referring to that?
For her body to grow. I don't know if it's even possible for them to do anything at this stage.
But the thing is, why are you saying 8 years?
Well, okay, 6 years for her to turn 18. I'm just saying.
But why 18? What's the big thing about 18, right? What? That's not the age of consent.
Here it is.
18? Well, it's not in England.
It is here. 18 for if you're with an adult. However, 16, once you hit 16, it's legal unless it's an adult. Yeah,
it's one of those gray areas.
So, yes, so I'm going to just, you know, give you, you know, generally speaking, you know, as someone that's European, and UK is generally more of less liberal than most parts in Europe, but plenty of places in Europe have 14 as the age of consent.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that could be true.
You know,
but
Germany and stuff. So you're only talking about O'Brien hanging on for 2 years for that, right?
Well, even so, Keiko's 35.
But
she's way past the age of consent.
That's true, but her body is now 12. Does she even have the ability to do anything with him?
I don't know Keiko that well.
You know what I mean. Okay, I
think that's a discussion.
Girl.
That's a discussion they need to have within their marriage.
Well, I guess, and the doctor too. You know, you know. I don't know. I'm just saying. Take any 12-year-old girl. Is it possible for her to perform like an adult? My instinct says no. There's a space issue problem that you don't quite have.
Perhaps, but remember, she is still, you know, she has the mental capabilities of an adult woman. She still has the memories. She still has the knowledge, the know-how, the experience.
Yes, the mechanics are there. She knows what to do, but is her body going to prevent that? Because, sorry, Miles, you know, you just got to wait till I grow a couple more years. No,
I didn't think so.
I don't know. That's the problem.
Not ever having actually been a preteen girl, I can't really speak to the point.
Yeah, but I could ask my daughter when you were 12. Do you think you could have been? No, it just,
how tall was the girl? How tall was the girl? Like 4 foot?
Maybe.
There are plenty of fully grown women that are 4 foot, 4 foot six, right? It's not, you know, not every woman hits 6 foot by a long shot. Not every woman will hit 5 foot. So I don't necessarily think that the, and it's, what a horrendous term you used here, the growth issue, is that much of a problem?
It is, because, you know, I'm looking at little Ro, as she's walking in the hallway. She looks like, well, of course, the actress that is what I'm talking about, is just starting to hit puberty, possibly.
No, just starting. I hear you. And I do think that the fact that it's O'Brien that's the husband rather than someone else does put in the contrast, right? He must be 2.5 times heavier than she is, for example.
Then I just had a sickening thought and said, well, then I guess she has to stay on top. But what I'm saying is it physically even
possible? I'm sure Kate goes on top even when she's in her full body.
Yeah, that's true. Miles, lay there. You stay there. I've got this. Yeah, I could see that too. But I don't know. I'm just saying, I don't think it's physically even possible for him to do anything with her at this point. And if she stays this way forever, it will be physically possible and forever. I don't know.
The thing is, I do think that this
question—I do think that this
episode does ask questions about, you know, what one would do if you had to revisit your childhood, and you have the story about Picard, about whether or not he needs to step out, and is it time for him to try to do something else, and what would you do with? If that gift was given to you. And there are similar issues around Roe, in particular about, again, you never had a childhood before because of the refugee camp. And, you know, what did you miss? Is it time, you know, is it appropriate for you now to take time out to breathe? You had your childhood effectively stolen. I do think it does ask, it tries to ask those questions. I don't think the episode's trying to ask, but if you had a husband, would you still need to keep him pleasured on Thursday? Don't think they're trying not to go there, but maybe why the hell did they put Keiko into this situation? They could have just used Geordi, and then what? None of these issues come up, do they? Geordi's not getting any for another 15 years.
Well, of course.
Watch him try to get a date on the holodeck.
Yeah.
Well, it's an interesting question that, right. Because I do bring it up, you know, she asked, is the marriage over? And like I said, it's only been a day. I think that that's kind of early to ask that question. But, you know, had the episode gone differently and they had to stay that way for a month or 2 months or 6 months, you know, before they found a solution to it, you know, it would be interesting to see how their relationship would have changed in that time. But this episode doesn't go into it.
And when everyone's queuing up to have the transportation procedure done so they get, you know, reformed as an adult, I assume that, you know, O'Brien's going to be at the front pushing Keiko, saying, no, you're going first. Can't wait anymore. It's been 8 weeks. 8 damn weeks.
Yeah. I mean, how long before Miles steps out on his wife? I mean, you know, I don't know. And he joins Geordi in the holodeck. No, that's even creepy itself.
Yeah, that's okay, a weird way to phrase it.
Okay, yeah. So here's the thing, though. I've answered my own question. There's absolutely no way I could carry on this marriage as it was last Thursday in this situation, no matter how much time has passed, until she once again grows up. Now, what would you guys do?
I personally don't think it's an issue until, you know, months ahead, or at least a couple of weeks ahead, right? I didn't have to have, you know, the wife went away on holiday for 2 weeks and I was left at home. I didn't have problems with the wife not being here and Thursday going around.
But your wife will come back and she'll be 12 years old. I know it's hard to answer that question because you want to say, but she is an adult. She just doesn't look like it, so it would be fine. But no, I can't for the life of me believe that this could ever be fine. like this?
Yeah, it's hard to say. It's not a situation I ever predict that I'll find myself in.
Oh, God, I hope not.
You say that today. But,
yeah. Well, my wife will never be on a shuttlecraft, I'll tell you that. No.
Yeah, I'm not sure the likelihood of her being involved in a transporter accident.
Because
that's the other important factor to remember here is that Miles is the one responsible for this. It was his fault.
Yeah, he was in control of the transporter.
So imagine the guilt he's feeling about this.
Okay, so anyway, I guess we got to go on, because like I said, we spent a lot of time on this issue last time. I knew we were going to spend a lot of time on this issue today. But okay, we've gotten out past the creepy point. So let's go on to Molly. She wants Mommy to read her a story. When she tries, not you, I want Mommy. So, not only can Miles not get over it, obviously Molly can't either. Would Molly ever accept her as Mommy?
I think so. I think eventually. I think she's just a little young right now to understand what's happening.
Oh, of course.
So I think kids would adapt relatively quickly, because I think the state of Mom and Dad, I actually don't think it's that, you know, hey, you know, you're 6 foot and you're big. I think it's other stuff. I think it's the ability for these people to care for and to take care of, you know, take care of them during the day, make sure that they're safe, and also, you know, not to be confused, not to be worried about day to day goings on. So if there's a 10-year-old that's able to do that, I think that they would be certainly latched onto as the mom character, quite effortlessly, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely agree.
Okay, so, but today, I'm sorry, you can't read Molly's story. So they finally reached the sector they needed to be to find the Lygos.
Well, can we talk real quick?
Nothing. Go ahead.
Well, can we talk real quick about the discussion with Picard, where he's talking about his possible future?
Oh yeah, that comes next with Deanna visiting him in his quarters.
You know, where he's, you know, they're spitballing the ideas, where they're thinking, you know, he could take some time off and study archaeology. He could go back to the academy and, you know, further his education. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got all kinds of possibilities. The future looks bright for him again.
Yeah, but doesn't want to become Wesley Crusher's roommate.
I want to see that show.
Yeah. That would be cool. But hey, I think Deanna, as much as I bag on Deanna, I thought she was awesome in this episode, trying to guide him and help him. Because she's absolutely right. You know, you get the gift of a second childhood without the pain of growing up again. So I'm wondering where that comes from for her.
I don't know. But
yeah.
But yeah, it seems like Picard should be psyched up a little bit more about this. You know, like I said, it's only been a day. I think, you know, a lot of this discussion is really preemptive. But you know, he's got a lot of options. Yeah, he could take a lot of time off and still come back to be the youngest admiral.
Yep. But he loses a Enterprise. He loses a flagship that he's commander of.
Of course, he wouldn't be the youngest admiral. He's still however old he is, so.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's true. The youngest looking admiral in Starfleet history.
There you go.
This is assuming that, like, you know, William Babyface Riker doesn't make admiral around the same time.
Okay. So, what do you think the other kids would be like? Say, we haven't talked about really Ro or Guinan. I mean, Guinan's absolutely enjoying this second childhood. Ro is absolutely hating this second childhood just as much as she hated the first one. I mean, she's a kid on the Enterprise. I'm surprised that she's not interested.
Guinan is acting like she has not got a care in the world. Uh-huh. She is just going with the flow. Hey, I'm a kid. Hey, if I turn back into an adult, that's great. If I'm not, hey, that's cool too. Mm-hmm. This is just a ride. I'm along for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think...
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think that's a healthy way to look at it.
Yeah, absolutely. Roe, on the other hand, I hated it then and I hate it now. But eventually she does turn around. You know, jumping on the bed, that was so funny. I could jump higher. how cute. Do you think Starfleet beds are designed for kids to jump on?
I'd be disappointed if they weren't.
Any bed worth its salt should be designed to be jumped on.
Yeah, that's right. I'm going to jump on mine. It hit the floor a bit. Anyway.
Actually, always the beds do look a little uncomfortable, right? Whenever they show you, in particular, you know, the memories go back to Geordi and his kind of his silver blanket and his unreasonably sized pillow that would do you nothing other than give you neck ache. I assume it wasn't a human pillow, but they gave it to him anyway. It's like one of those weird aliens that have like a weird shaped neck.
This is all we got.
most of them sleep in their uniforms anyway. So.
Of course. Because they have to jump out of bed and run somewhere. Okay, so Dr. Crusher thinks she has a way to regain the RVA. We don't know what RVA is. I don't know.
As I recall, that was completely made up.
Yeah, of course.
It has no basis in science whatsoever.
No. And the trick is to use the transporter. So what would happen? The transporter can either bring them back the way they were, or what if... that's another thing I remember asking. What if it made them younger? What if now instead of 12, they were 7? Do you think the new normal could just carry on after that?
Well, do they still have their adult brains?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. That would just be too weird. No, there's no marriage anymore.
So I see where you're going, Loon. I think next you're going to say, let's assume that they went to a transport accident and they came out like a horse. Would that end the marriage?
Or a newborn baby. What if they came back as a newborn baby? They have their memories, but all they could do is cry, or do they actually talk? Damn it, Dr. Crusher, help me!
Yeah, I want to see the episode where I said, I know what it looks like, Miles, but this horse here has all the memories of cake. She's as expressive as she's ever been.
Horse on the bridge!
And then Miles thinking, well, this isn't how I thought my marriage was going to go. But while in Rome...
Yeah, he's probably wishing he could be the horse.
Oh, man. That is the direction this conversation did not take last time.
No, it did not. Okay. Well, hey, you know, I guess if, you know, she turned into a cat, he could still get... Never mind.
I'm just picturing the uniforms they'd have to make for these guys. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay.
Oh, man.
So, anyway, we talked about the girls jumping on the bed. So, they reach the planet, and guess what they find? Dun, dun, dun. Two Klingon ships that are firing on them. Can anybody tell me why two Klingon ships are better than the Federation flagship? How could they possibly have got the take on them? I mean, what was Worf doing?
Oh, those are my brothers. They're not gonna... What the hell are they doing? Uh-oh. What do I do?
So the Enterprise is being boarded, but not by Klingons. By Ferengi.
Yeah, that didn't take long. How many shots? Yeah, that was one of the things that I thought about this episode, too. How many shots did the Enterprise take before they fired back?
They always do that. They always get pulverized before they then fire a warning shot across the bow.
I mean, they're getting
50%.
They're getting pounded by these ships, and Riker's is asking about status reports about various parts of the ship. Return fire, come on.
Why can't Worf just do it automatically? He's got to wait till somebody says, "Okay, fine, we've done our best. Go ahead, send one torpedo their way at 50% strength, please."
Oh, return fire. Oh,
Return fire? Oh,
that's a good idea.
I can imagine him being on the Worf being on the bridge saying, "What the f- is going on here? Can I fire yet?" No, Mr. Worf. We have to give them a chance to just calm down.
Give me the damage report again.
Yeah. What's that? What are the shields at? Okay, well, now that they're at 4%, I guess we could go ahead and try and fire back. And, of course, it doesn't do any good because they get boarded, as you know they're going to.
Yeah, the one Ferengi materializes right there on the bridge. Worf winds up his shot, takes a shot, misses by a mile.
Of course.
Always. Doesn't try to get off a second shot before he's taken down.
Of course, yeah. You get rid of the big Ferengi, or get big Klingon first.
The Ferengi materialized right next to Data. Data watches this whole thing go down before he finally stands up, and then it's too late.
It kind of reminds me the Federation treat a fight, a phaser fight, just like martial arts. You know, when you go up against three opponents, and they stand around you dancing menacingly, and while you take them out one by one.
One at a time.
Yes, and they wait till the other one goes down before they come at you, and then they go down, and then the third one, who's been dancing around the whole time, then finally decides, okay, it's my turn. Oop, whoop, I go down. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. They all sit there while this Ferengi beams onto the bridge, and Worf, who couldn't possibly hit a bull if it was sitting in front of him, tries to fire, misses, and then waits for the Ferengi to take him out, because what you need to do is you can only fire once. You fire one at a time. Okay, well, there's my shot. Okay, take yours. So, I don't know.
It's that code of honor thing.
Absolutely.
You gotta give the enemy their chance.
Yes, right. Yeah. Yeah, it's like when they're in a hand fight, a fist, or what do they call it? Hand-to-hand combat. No one ever thinks about kicking someone square in the balls. That's going to take them down for at least a couple seconds until you could finish them off. But no, they never do that. That would never be a fair fight.
So. Kirk did in Undiscovered Country.
Oh, that's true.
Well, yeah. He didn't. He didn't know it.
Not on purpose.
He thought it was the guy's knee.
Yeah, that's not his name. Oh, I mean, you can hear him in the background. Oh, you know, and what's he do? He sends the doctor. Hey, go help him. What's the doctor going to do? Rub his knee? There.
Put some ice on it.
What if the Ferengi, the Klingon enjoyed that? Keep massaging, doctor. Keep massaging. Nah. Anyway, so... Okay, so the Ferengi transport all able-bodied adults to the surface.
Yeah, that was oddly specific.
It is. What about the children? What are the Ferengi going to sell the children? Kill the children? Eat the children?
By the way, did they say able-bodied?
They yeah. did.
All able-bodied adults to the surface.
Okay,
they
so what happens
to mine?
Okay, so what about Geordi? Is Geordi, does he get qualified as not able-bodied because he's blind? Hmm. You know, is there an equivalent to like a Melora in a wheelchair down on deck 12 that's still sitting there going, look, I find this to be rather offensive.
Yeah, Captain Pike in his chair would have been fine.
Yeah.
Is there an ADA equivalent on the ship, you know, Americans with Disabilities Act? Is there such a thing in the Federation?
And also, is Data an adult? I mean, Data's like, oh, we'll leave Geordi, Melora, Data, and Pike. I'm sure I'll be fine.
That's my fantasy away team.
All right. Yeah. I mean, they don't even keep the senior members of the crew to help them run the ship. That's another thing. The Ferengi know how to run the ship.
Well, they didn't quite. Right.
Well, the computer's locked out. Well, they can't really. They can't do much of anything.
Yeah, that's true. They need the computer codes, and they're going to start killing children if they don't get them.
Okay, so how long did it take? What's it? How long did it take the Borg to get through the computer once it was encrypted by Data? Because I think the Ferengi kind of get there sooner, right? They do manage to get in through one means or another before the Borg were able to.
Mm-hmm. All right, so the school. This was dumb. We need to regain control of the ship. Hey, I know my computer codes will work. I'll use this computer over here. Ah, wait, it only plays games.
No, I think this is fantastic. This is when you seriously need to do something, and you pick up an iPad before you realize that the damn thing's actually just a toy and has no capability of doing anything proper. And you think, okay, yeah, something's gone wrong here. So the idea of a, hey, iPad, can I browse the internet? No. Would you like to look at this app? No, I don't want to look at this app. Go away. I need to do this.
Would you like to see pictures of giraffes?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah, they just hit that technical brick wall at every step of the way. Computer, give me a visual of the security grid. I'm sorry, I can't do that, but would you like to know how apples grow? No, I would like to know if I could get some phasers from here. I'm sorry, we can't do that. But would you like to know what happens to the average 12-year-old with adult thoughts?
Yeah, I don't think that would have been covered in the curriculum.
No one ever thought of it. No one ever thought of it.
No. Luckily, Guinan's there to explain things. Mm-hmm. You got to talk to it like a kid.
Yep.
Which I think that was kind of dumb. She says, you know, show me a picture of the inside of the Enterprise. And I'm like, it should have just pulled up like an image of a corridor. This is what the inside of the ship looks like. It's like,
yep.
No, instead it actually gives the schematic that Picard was actually wanting to have to begin with.
Really? Yeah, that is true. Pretty much it did help him. Okay, so the kids got a plan to take... They have to plan to take back the ship. First, they need the Ferengi to begin behaving like Ferengi. You know, stupid as always. And the best way to do that is to show them this shiny little toy.
Well, don't forget, the other kids are in the classroom not contributing at all. They're just playing.
No, because they're kids. They don't have adult memories like the others. What do we think of Alexander in this episode, though?
I think I mentioned this last time. Alexander's great in this episode. The performance and the character don't lead me to think that I wish that Alexander was sent back to Earth. So this is one of his better performances, I find.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Don't worry, there may be a future one that we just go, oh, good God, send him away.
Okay. But that was a huge car he was playing with.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So while the Ferengi is chasing the toy around the ship, which, by the way, hey, that was some pretty damn good driving considering he wasn't looking at it. How could it not? I hit walls on toy cars when I'm right there in front of it. How could he not? He's round corners. Everything was just fine.
See,
the ship like a buck in my hand.
In my head canon, that car had a little camera on it, and they were looking at it through some sort of a screen.
There we go. That's the way it has to be.
That's how I'm visualizing it, because other than that, yeah, like you said, I'd be hitting walls.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, anyway, while he's chasing the toy around, hey, you guys need to go and get some weapons. Crawl through the Dreyfus tubes. Why was nobody watching the children? Why is there not a guard inside there?
Well, they're just dumb kids. What are they going to do?
Yeah, that's true. What are they going to do? Yep. Until Picard comes up with the idea.
So, Lou, I think your criticism is like not really valid because you're accusing the Ferengi of being short-sighted because they didn't realize that there was a chance that four experienced members of the crew had been turned into prepubescent kids just minutes before they boarded. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's
realistically speaking,
a lot of people run.
It's an explanation you have to foresee. You have to anticipate that possibility that happened. And these Ferengi, you just don't do it, you know?
No. They plan a pretty damn precision takeover of the Enterprise, but they left kids on board who are smarter than your average kid, or more experienced than your average kid. I mean, why would they leave the kids on board? The only reason they left the kids on board is so that they can do a revolt.
Well, not only that, you know, you think about it too. the Fringi have two Klingon ships, and out of that whole thing, they beam over, what, eight people?
Yeah.
If yeah, that, more than eight people to hold the ship. I mean, in complete fairness, right, in First Contact, there were about eight Borg that held the ship. You'd never send the number of people you need. It's like,
no, but the Borg, you know, they start assimilating. Well, next thing you know, your ranks are growing, but not the Ferengi.
This is before they do the Borg send one ship to Earth. It gets blown up. They then send another single ship to Earth.
Eight years later.
And what they do, they just about manage to get out of that battle and go into the past. And they get blown up, but they send over three dudes to take the ship.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are quite conservative. They're a bunch of fiscal conservatives, right? That are refusing to commit to any kind of significant project.
They don't want to waste resources that they don't have to expend.
They're not overpaying to take over Earth. No way.
No, because they are of the belief, if at first you don't succeed, just give it up. Don't even bother trying again. Okay. So anyway, Picard comes up with an idea and says, I want to see my father. Now. And then he goes running into the observation lounge. You know, Riker's face was priceless when he hears Dad, and he runs to his arms.
That Fringi gave up way too early. He's like, "All right, just stop that."
Yeah,
he should have been like, "Shut up and get back in there."
Really? Yeah. Just and that would that would
yeah
shut
that would
get up.
That would have ended his plan right then and there.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But can't you just turn the computers in the school on? We want something to play.
Well, I'll try. If the Ferengi will let Daddy do that, I will.
Yeah. Thanks, number one. Yeah,
you'll get Netflix. No YouTube. You'll get Netflix. No YouTube.
Yeah, Netflix. Yeah. Thanks, number one. He's my number one dad. Oh, how funny. How funny.
Well, there's one part that we glossed over earlier is where Riker and Crusher were having a conversation about how there's a possibility that if they lose more of these RVN or RVA sequences, they could possibly get younger.
Yep.
And the fact that they don't know if their mental capacities are going to remain what they are or if they will deteriorate further down the road. So they don't really address it in the episode, but I think one of the initial versions of the script had Riker at this point wondering if Picard was really starting to lose and actually believe that he was his dad. I don't know if that's true or not, but I kind of seemed like they were trying to set it up that way, but they never really got back to that point.
Yeah, we also forgot to mention little Picard running his hand through his hair. Oh, this feels so good. So anyway, the Daemon in the ready room, is he trying to eat Picard's fish?
I think so.
Yummy. Look at that. How do I get in here? Oh, and the shuttle was destroyed. We forgot about that. Yeah, shuttle was destroyed, and they got pieces of it, and it breaks down to its elements, pieces. It just crumbles right in Geordi's hand, but okay. Anyway, now we got past that part, because it's unnecessary. Who cares? The shuttle crumbled. It's time to teach Morta how to use a computer. But first, we got to confuse the hell out of him. An easy process, of course, but do you think anything Riker said was real? I don't know. I don't remember what he said, but
I think that he pulled it completely off the top of his head.
Yeah. The quadrostatic lama rama lama ding dong.
Heisen frappin, you know, yeah. I mean, obviously it was scripted out, so Jonathan Frakes is, you know, reading the script, but he plays it wonderfully. It is complete gibberish nonsense that he plays off as being dead serious.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was wonderful.
Okay, so, he's able to give Picard command access to the computer, so now it's time to start the plan. What is the plan? Round up as many Ferengi as possible and lock them behind a force field in a transporter room. And one way to do it is, Tech, you're it!
Now, I have a question about these communicators. When you activate it and the transporter locks on, who is it locking on to? Because the one on the front of the car bumps into the Ferengi, and then the Ferengi jumps back, but the Ferengi is the one beamed away.
Yeah.
The two in engineering that Guinan and Roe do, they run up and slap the comm badges on them. They're the ones who activated it, but yet it was the Ferengi who still got beamed away. Huh. So... Who exactly are these comm patches locking onto here?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good question. It's hard to say for sure. They obviously told the computer when this one gets tapped or something. But the one with the car, you're right. How'd that happen?
It should have just beamed the car away.
The whole thing, yeah. Yeah, whatever this car touches, beam it away.
If they have computer access, though... why didn't they just ask the computer that, could you please beam all Ferengi?
Flock kind of Ferengis.
It's just that, right? You don't need to do anything else. You don't. There are clearly sensors, and you clearly can tell what a Ferengi is. And even if, hey, let's say that you can't tell what a Ferengi is. Say, all life forms less than, 160 pounds or something. Yeah, some of the kids will be beamed in there with them.
But yeah, collateral damage.
You're not going to get Riker or any of the men. So it's easy to get there. It doesn't take much, I don't think.
Yeah, but if you do that, then you don't get the wonderful Riker doing the Kirk double-fisted overhand.
Oh, yeah. 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 Plus, here's another question. How many times have we seen... them release some kind of neurological gas or that knocks everybody except for this room out. And you're done. You sort it later. But they wouldn't have had to go through all this.
Well, also, aren't Ferengi susceptible to just like, loud opera music anyway? Can they No? I thought they could have been taken out by
just a high-pitched noise over the comm system.
Yeah.
That is true. You're right. High-pitched noise would have done it. Just like a dog, So they round up all the Ferengi except for the two on the bridge. And when we look at it, there's only, the Enterprise was taken over by the Ferengi who had six people in their gang of numbnuts. How is that even possible?
What's the question here? I didn't get in the question.
Yeah, how could they possibly have taken over the ship with six people? Unless they took over the ship with 100 and then beamed 94 back down to the planet or something. There's no way they could... the first thing that should have happened when this all got sorted out is Worf should have been fired.
Yeah.
But then again, Riker also needs to go through more tactical training.
Number one, when they're firing on you, you fire back.
Do you think that Picard and Riker and Worf have just got each other's backs on the grounds that it's starting to look just as bad for them? So, oi, John, where did you get this guy from? Yeah, he was kind of a con for a while, and then we thought we'd promote him when the last one was killed, and I didn't want to fill out the paperwork to get a new chief of security. And he turned out to be bad, did he? Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, we're all on the same page, right? There was 12 ships. There were 50 guys that beamed onto the bridge. We had no... we're all on board here, right?
Yeah. They phasered every one of us.
Multiple times.
Multiple times, yeah. They kept hitting me. So Picard walks onto the bridge and says, I believe you're in my chair. Yeah, I guess I am.
Okay, so here's the thing, though. I think it's bad because... if you were to do that, you really need the other guy to appreciate what's happening. And here, I just think this Ferengi is like a wave of the fairies. I don't think he knows what's going on. So it's not even as if, I failed. But he's actually thinking, what the hell is this kid doing here?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, damn it. I should have beamed all them down. I knew it.
Call for your backup. Call the guy on the bridge. Where the hell are you? Get in here.
Anybody here? Somebody help me?
Or, you know, call back over to the Ferengi ship, say, hey, send more people.
Yeah. But I got to tell you about the one Ferengi, though. He seemed rather sadistic. I mean, he's like, oh, things could happen. People could die like those kids down there. He did seem like he was just evil.
I will kill everyone, starting with your son.
Yeah. Or I will eat them.
Yeah. That was the plan anyway. I don't know what they're doing.
But absolutely. I always get the impression that the Ferengi aren't... These guys aren't evil. They've just seen, like, an evil film, and they know... they think they have to behave in this way. I never get the impression that the threat is... I mean, frankly, the threat isn't real, right? The Ferengi, for crying out loud.
Well, I mean, for this episode, though, I mean, who else could you possibly have being the bad guys here taking over the ship? I mean, you're going to have them going up against these kids. I mean, you're not going to have the Borg being the enemy here. You could probably get away with maybe the Romulans, but, you know, the Ferengi were just, you know what, we're going to have them fighting kids. This seems like the best way to go.
Okay. All right, so the kids have taken over the ship again. They have their weapons. Time to start rounding them up, and they do. Now it's time to return the children back to adults. And we're going to start with Picard. And get this, believe it or not, Dr. Crusher actually got it right. She did it. She came up with the proper solution. And he comes back as his adult self, and the first thing he does was taps his head to see if he has hair.
Well, so, what you didn't see, the previous, like, three or four attempts where they sent Ro back, she came back as a two-year-old, sent her again, came back as a 60-year-old, and just kept on doing it until they landed on the right thing.
It could be. I don't know.
They just used the Pulaski method, right? They used this strand of hair or something that they had in the quarters. Said, yeah, we're gonna beam her up.
I was about to say, the Pulaski method of what? Just putting some hair out of your backside. But I then thought that probably wasn't the best way of phrasing it.
No,
you get it from the hairbrush and you tell the computer, this is the age that I want you to beam them back to.
Yeah. I wonder if little Guinan wore those hats all her life. Big hats all her life.
Well, based on how it changes shape, I'm pretty sure it's part of her haircut.
Oh, that could be. Yeah. All right.
You would think that when they went back through the transporter, they'd be wearing, like, loose-fitting clothes.
Yeah, just in case.
Because I could see them coming back out there looking like the Incredible Hulk, you know.
Yep.
You know, their clothes all stretched out and torn and ripped.
All right, so we're at the end where, you know, everybody has been restored except for two people. We have Guinan and Ro, and Ro has drawn a picture of her mother, which is something she was never able to do. And when it's time for her to return to her adult self, Guinan stops her. I think this is a very, very cute scene, you know, and says, you know, the transporter's always going to be there. Let's just enjoy your childhood for a couple more minutes. I thought that was very sweet.
Well, yeah, but at the same time, there is nothing stopping Ro from drawing a picture, no matter what age she is. You know, she can put the crayon down, she can go bigify herself, and she can come back and finish this picture. There's nothing inherently kidness about it, necessarily. I guess that's what she's absolutely right. The transporter will be there later, you know. I'm sure that they had to reconfigure a whole lot of stuff. But yeah, whatever, take your time. But, you know, she, even after she regains her, you know, becomes the adult again, she can still jump on the bed. She can still color pictures. She can still paint. You know, I don't know. That just seemed like a weird excuse.
I guess. So, but still, it was pretty touching. Okay, so I think... And did we forget anything?
I don't think so. I think we about hit everything.
Okay, I'll make sure I download this version of the show this time. That way we make sure we've got it. Okay, so it's now time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. Let's see. Matt, you're the guest. We always usually go with the guest first. So why don't you tell us what you thought and give it your rating.
Okay. Well, like I said from the get-go, this is one of my favorite episodes. I always like this one. I don't really know why. It's a cute, fun one. But, you know, I got thinking about it. This episode has a lot to offer. It has two Picards in it, which right off the bat is a bonus for any Star Trek episode you're ever going to get. You get the firefight between the ships. You get O'Brien being tortured again. You've got Alexander, which is always great to see him in here. You had a transporter accident involved. You had jumping on the bed. You had...
an extra star for that.
Yeah. You had little girls coming on to adult men.
You know,
what else could there be?
I forgot to mention, one of my favorite lockout codes always was Riker Omega 3, because he's used it in several episodes. But I think this is the first time we ever saw that. And then, of course, you get the wonderful "He's my number one dad." It's the line of Star Trek. I mean, the only thing this episode didn't have was Lwaxana Troi and a malfunctioning holodeck. If you'd had any of those, this would be the perfect episode.
Or a malfunctioning turbo lift. Yes.
So
I thought she was pretty great in, too. Anyway, go on.
But this episode has a lot to offer, and it's fun. It's, you know, it's hokey at times, but, you know, it's good just for a watch. I give this one a 5 out of 5 every day of the week.
Okay. All right, then. James, how about you? Let's see what you think about it today versus a few weeks ago.
Oh, I think I'm coming in softer on this one, I have to say. it was nice. I mean, I think it's a pile of nonsense, right? It's clearly like a big mix of nonsense. And I think that they dropped the ball in order to ask interesting questions about what's happening here. I don't think, for example, they could have very easily dedicated more time to Rose life and actually make it a, you know, proper conundrum about, you know, what is this magical thing being offered to the crew or to the four of the crew that got reverted? I think that in a way, I think it's a bit of a mishmash between that question and the fact that, hey, wouldn't it be fun for the Ferengi to come on board and then we have all of these crazy japes and eventually kind of, you know, outsmart them? So it's a bit of a weird kind of a hodgepodge of an episode that's been glued together. But it's been a fun discussion. It wasn't our first discussion on this episode, and it's probably a sign, right, of a relatively decent decent story or a decent execution at the very least. But we've been able to do this twice, and I don't think we've revisited too much old ground, except for Lou having this weird obsession about Keiko's. I'll give
that,
this.
That took a weird turn. Yeah,
I'll give this 4 out of 5. It's not a 5 out of 5 for me, but I leave this conversation feeling warm about this episode, and I wouldn't skip it if it was on.
A 4 out of 5. So we'll add that with your 3 that you gave it last time, and we'll come up with a 3.5. Okay, I'll change it to 4, which you can do. So, all right, 4 out of 5. Let's see here. So for me, well, it seems a little silly if these characters would have been changed to children with their adult brains and experiences. But if they became real children again, should the accident have wiped their memories of everything in the past, or... You know, or I mean, how could the computer can't possibly come up with the memories up to the body point that they've become. So it makes perfect sense that they have their memories intact. But you know, does a brain get bigger as we age? I imagine it does.
Well, I mean, it certainly grows, right?
Yeah,
even in the sense that a baby's got a smaller brain.
Yeah.
It's just a smaller person.
Okay. So could a shrinked brain retain everything? We don't really know. Doesn't matter. We'll just go with it.
So we've not they've not managed to get funding for that experiment. So it's still one of these areas of science that people are working on, whether or not you can shove all of the knowledge of an adult into a small brain.
Yeah. No.
They haven't studied what happens if you make a brain younger.
Hey, you want the movie that's authoritative on brains? Just look up Steve Martin's The Man with Two Brains.
I have not seen that one.
Yeah, yep. It's pretty bad. It's pretty hokey as all get out, but basically his wife dies and he puts her brain in a jar and tries to find a nice, good-looking woman to put, you know, to switch the brain with his wife. And it's, you know, he's running around with the brain in a jar. Believe me, you're not missing much, but it's called The Man with Two Brains.
Well, you're selling it, though.
Yeah, no, I say, if you want to talk about brains, watch that one.
I've always interpreted that question, that title, to be that The Man with Two Brains is a person that's very clever, rather than someone who happens to have a lot of jars that are pickling brains.
Oh,
so
yeah!
So I'm never gonna be able to hear that in the same way again.
No, you're not. He does walk into this room that's got brains in jars all over, and they talk. He hears them talk. Ugh. Okay, anyway, it was a sucky movie. I'm sure he wants to forget he was ever in it. But anyway, so the band of five children who are able to outwit the Ferengi just sounds stupid, but it makes sense, you know? The Ferengi do suck all day, every day. There's the time to get profit. I don't know what the profit in... Well, the profit in the flagship of the Federation probably was pretty good, I guess. So that's my take on this, and but I do like it still. I like it a lot. No matter how creepy it's going to get, because, you know, I give it a 4. I still give it a 4. I gave it a 4 last time and gave it a 4 this time. So we're consistent. Okay, so, yeah, I think I'm going to make sure you're back for the next 2, Matt.
All right. I guess.
A fistful of datas. So Jordan's
the holodeck malfunction. There you go. They should have combined that one with this one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You have a fistful of datas in this situation? Data's on the planet somewhere. Okay. Oh, that's another thing. What about the planet? When the people went back to beam their crew, do you think they would have had some resistance from the Ferengi on the planet, or...
I doubt there are any the Ferengi on the planet. I just assume that the able-bodied adults would just give them clear instructions and be expected to get on with it. Because, look, if you are hiring guards and people to force the slave labor, it just adds to the cost. So it's not an economic move on behalf of the Ferengi.
Okay.
Data's memory malfunction turns a Wild West fantasy into a real live shootout.
My God, you've been shot!
Now, with only primitive defenses, can Worf stop a gang of murderous outlaws?
Where have they taken my son?
And with no escape, can he survive a violent showdown?
There's a gunfighter out there who has the speed and accuracy of an android.
On Star Trek, The Next Generation.
All right, then. So, everybody, join us next time as we review episode... oh, yeah, 8. Episode 8 of Season 6, and that is called A Fistful of Datas. It's going to be fascinating to see how that show comes out. I can't wait to record it.
Again.
We'll see you then.
Yeah, maybe. No, I don't know. I mean, you know, let's face it. I may even talk about in the quality of life, which is after that, about how you're not coming on for the next several episodes. So we're gonna miss you, Matt.
Y'all are finally getting tired of me. That must be it.
Yeah, it might be. It could be. But we talked to you more times than we were supposed to.
It's always a pleasure.
All right, thank you. So, all right, guys, everybody, take care and good night.
Good night.
Good night.